And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Scott Spears back with you on this Thursday, January the 21st, 2016, 1:14 coming up on 1:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are so happy today to be joined in studio by former United States Representative, journalist, done a lot of things, worked under President Reagan, Clarence Bud Brown. How was the first hour for you, Bud? Did it go okay?
It's fine by me.
Good. I'm glad. You know, I do want to talk more about this idea of bipartisanship in Congress. We were talking, people don't always vote the party line. Is that right?
That's true.
Why is there an assumption that they do?
I don't know.
When you had something in front of you to vote on, what important factors were important to you in legislation?
First place, how would that be read by my constituents? And if you had constituents who were strongly in one camp or another, you wanted to vote to attract your constituents if you could. And if you came from that camp, there is more likelihood that you would vote with that camp when that time came. On the other hand, the question of, I happened to be in the Congress when the only negative vote for going into World War II was cast by a woman who was from Wyoming. And I sat next to her, close to her, because I was a child at the time, and my dad had said, "You go over there and get lost because I don't have time to put up with you while you're here." And so I watched her agonize over the vote, and it was the only vote against the United States entering World War II. But she believed what she believed, and that was that we should not be entering World War II. The provocation done by the people who were going to get us into war and who attacked us at Pearl Harbor and we were not prepared and so forth wasn't sufficient to get our vote.
Was there ever a vote that you took that you really didn't agree with, but you voted because there was a compromise?
You're losing me.
Was there ever a vote that you
If
had,
there was a compromise, yeah, that, and if I was part of that compromise, I probably voted for it. If I was not a part of the compromise, I would have voted against it.
Was it easy to compromise?
I can't think of things that it was not easy to compromise. Can you?
No, never easy. It takes some hard work.
Right. Do you think people have a harder time now in your positions to compromise than you did because of the media? Because there's this idea now.
Oh, yes. We've got a very liberal media. We've got, unfortunately, it permeates all the media that you can think of. It did not affect the way I ran the Star Republican when I was down running the newspaper in our family community. But I didn't run it with the idea of trying to antagonize or irritate any part of the community. I was trying to select what I thought were the casual and significantly important attitudes of the people in the town, and we lost some. We had letters written back to complain about what we'd said editorially in the newspaper, but the newspaper survived until the economy got us from other directions.
Is there something that you hold up as a very proud moment in your time in Washington, a part of the being a representative, something that was very important to you that got done, your greatest moment?
Well, we've had so many moments. I think one of the important things that happened when I was in the Congress, and it had nothing to do with the votes, it had to do with the organization of the Joint Economic Committee. And I had on that Joint Economic Committee rabid Democrats from Southern California. I had rabid Republicans from rural areas of the country as sort of a selection. And for the first time in 40 years, we got a unanimous consent report from that mixed bag. And I have to say that that's one of the things that I am most proud of, because I was the one in charge as the chairman of the Joint Economic Committee at the time, and we got it through. And it was on significant economic issues, which was purpose that I had in wanting to head up the Joint Economic Committee, economic being part of the name of the committee. So I think we won the day, even with people who would not have voted on what color that wall is.
And on the flip side of that coin, is there something you regret in your time there? Do you have any regrets?
I can't think of any great regrets that I've had, because the landscape is changing beneath you all the time. I'm sure there are ones when I voted in a way that I don't take a great deal of pride in, but I thought were the right kinds of votes for the nature of the community I represented. But
there was a time when someone, by one vote, you lost on deregulation.
Yeah, well, we were trying to deregulate something in one of the committees, and one of my friends who shared my views said, "You've got to go down and talk to Congressman so-and-so. He is in his office weeping because he told you he'd vote for you and he didn't do it." And I said, "I'll be glad to go down sometime soon, but if I went down now, I'd kill him."
And he was a Republican.
Yeah, and when it does become personal in those moments.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Something interesting that I find, why did you decide to run for governor? Early 1980s.
First, I thought the landscape was right for it, because we had just won the Congress with the Reagan program, and then soon after that, we lost it, because you could see that some of the radical things that he wanted to do, radical in the minds of much of the people who voted on it, not I, had gone a little too far. And so that's why I thought we should vote for Reagan, because of the positions that he took. And I left Congress to run in the same political venue, if I could say it that way, as was my assumption of where the congressman was. The Congress was at the time, and I think I missed the turn that I did not recognize that had let the public have a chance to, after they had voted for Reagan, to want to be against him. And that was the year I ran. Later came back, and now everybody talks about that great Republican president we had in Ronald Reagan. I thought at the time that they were right, that they were wrong, and they're being too enthusiastic. And then later, when they re-enthused for him, I thought, well, there we go. Unfortunately, my timing was not very good politically at that point.
What is it like to run for governor?
It's very demanding. Particularly if you have had only a portion of the state in your throw, so it was difficult, because you didn't know the neighborhoods you're expected to get up and speak to.
When election night happened in 1983, what was that night like?
I look at my wife. We were together, obviously. I think you learn to take your losses along with your successes because remember how long I'd been in the Congress. I'd been there a long time, and we had been defeated in many issues in which I had strong feelings. We'd won many of the issues in which I had strong feelings, too.
Is it hard to lose an election?
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, it's harder on the wise than it is on the guys who are in the trenches. But if you think
of all the people.
Yeah.
And you don't think all just totally insulated to the family. You think of all the people who helped and really believed in it and gave their all, not just money, but time and effort, and that's what makes it so difficult.
When that's over and the election's over and you've been so busy, been a representative for 8 terms, what did you think you were going to do at that point? What did you feel like doing?
What did you think we ought to do? No. First place, at that time.
You went with AEI.
Yeah.
American Enterprise Institute.
Yeah, but that's not the point. The American Enterprise Institute is another one of these organizations in which you know generally where their positions are on things, and you found that you could be comfortable with them. But that's not the point. The point is that you feel very disappointed that your views were not represented by the members of Congress running in their districts. Now remember this, in their district could not support the administration that had just gotten elected, the Reagan administration. And that was, again, where my judgment had not been successful in turning that sheet. So we accepted it and chose any other organization that we could join up with. One of them was the U.S. Capitol Historical Society, who can be against the United States Capitol, and it was in a point of need at that point in terms of its responsible leadership. And so I used that. I used some of the other personal interests that I'd had in legislative affairs that needed leadership help at that point.
At one point, though, you did become Deputy Secretary of Commerce?
Yes.
Under President Reagan. How did that come about?
Reagan came in with a group of people who wanted to be in the cabinet. And one of them was the guy who was the cabinet officer that I served. And he had not been successful in whom he selected because the guy didn't have the credentials for running a department as complex as the Commerce Department is, because you have everything from fish and wildlife and, I can't think of anything else, minority business. Is how far is that from fish and wildlife? But at any rate, the choices of the department, which are all under the guy who is running the department, and in this case it was I, according to the secretary, who said that he would leave me the responsibility of running the various parts of the department. I had no idea, I think at the moment, how diverse the department was. But I can remember one time we had a guy on, when you had a fight going between fishermen and shrimpers, people who were protecting the shrimp. And I told him, I said, you go down and settle that fight one way or the other, but don't come back with it's not settled. And I told him, if you do, just don't come back. I mean, if that's your conclusion, just don't come back, because I'll have no use for you in the department. And they do what they do and with that kind of an admonition, and they were successful.
When you left that position in 88, did you ever have a desire to go back into political life?
What did I do after 88? Do you remember?
Well, yes, you... I don't think he did. You mean elective office?
Yeah, elective office.
Is that what you're talking about?
To get back in. Yeah.
I don't know. Did you?
No, I don't think so.
Didn't I? When you
well,
went
been there, done that.
Didn't? Yeah, at that point, when you went back to the publishing company, were things different then than they had been when you were busy with your political career? How had things changed in the media?
In the newspaper business, they deteriorated, unfortunately, very, very much. Nobody wants to spend money on a standing ad, if I can put it that way. Radio, you can talk about other things, and you can bring about the improvements like ours for public service. But in the newspaper business, once it's in print, it's hard to get rid of it. And you probably are aware of what's happened to the Cincinnati papers, the Metropolitan dailies around the country, and so forth. They don't want to take that much time explaining anything in print that perhaps will come back and haunt them someday. I don't know. I don't know what the commentary there is. And in our case, our weeklies became almost unmanageable. Because in some of them you got no advertising, you had to have advertising to put it in paper in print, and so that was the differentiation. I don't know how newspapers are doing in these days here in communities like Marin County.
Difficult, I think. I think it's a lot more difficult than it used to be.
You should observe it, and I think that a lot of other people have observed it. I'd like to know how some of the great papers in Ohio have been surviving, because I keep seeing stories in Publishers Auxiliary, the sort of reportage of newspapers, that some of the very famous names in newspapers don't carry the weight they used to.
Do you think that's a change for the good or the bad, that we've went so much... technology-wise, went so far in that direction?
I think only time can answer that problem. Will you ever get back to country newspapers? Will you ever get back to magazines that are settled on a certain topic? I'm not sure we will. I don't know what's going to replace them, however, and I think something should, and I think, unfortunately, something will, and I don't know that it'll be as attractive. I lived through, with a peculiar vantage point, the rise of Hitler in Germany. Because in the small town I was living in, my dad arranged for me to be taught German by a refugee who came over to live with his aunt and uncle, I think it was, who had moved to the U.S. years before, the Kohlhagen family, and he was 2 or 3 years older than I, and his purpose was to teach me German. What he taught me, though, was that the situation was deteriorating very rapidly for Jews in Germany, and that I could only stand and watch it from a distance, because I was only, 13, 14, and Walter Dattenbach was his name. He came over to affiliate with a business in Cincinnati that has lasted for years, and I saw him after about 50 years, and he said, well, we didn't do too well in Germany, but I don't know how well we can do here. So that was his judgment on the change that has been occurring in the United States and may continue to occur.
What he did in that interim time was to go with a think tank called American Enterprise Institute. I'm not sure that's on your list of things, mm-hmm. but he was a senior consultant in that regard for energy situations which he had been involved in the Congress.
How did that play a part in your life, working for that group?
Well, what is the price of oil now?
Yeah.
you try to decide what is a marketable way of dealing with things. I frankly didn't know anything about fracking at that time. It was a technical term that I had never heard, but it was a way to get oil out of whatever is left in the ground. And it has broken the price of oil.
Yeah. Well, you know, an interesting...
And it's proving that if there's plenty of something, you can't hold the price up on you. It has to drift. And that's... I wish that had happened while I was still using energy as one of my activities.
You also played a part in broadcasting and with the FCC. Talk a little bit about your involvement there.
The fact that we would like to have a radio station in the Brown Publishing Company was really my father's idea, because he said, I think there's a chance now that we can get licensed, and we did. It was not an easy proposition to get licensed, and it was not an easy proposition to try to make money out of a small radio station in a community the size of Urbana. As a matter of fact, I'd love to see now what is being distributed through the newspaper and radio industry in terms of booklets that will tell you who's running what parts of it. Because my guess is that there are not a lot of the same people involved in those industries, because it's not become a profitable industry. I don't know how WMRN or this station is doing, but you suggested to me that there are two stations in Marion, and they were not the two stations that I thought I could remember from the days when I was a congressman from this area.
But talk about John Dingell and you working together on C-SPAN and that.
Well,
yeah. FM, C-SPAN.
Well, Part of the radio industry is, when I can remember it from the younger days, was when Lowell Thomas was who you listened to out of Cincinnati. And certainly he was the only voice that we heard out of Cincinnati when I was growing up for a while, and then you got a lot of other voices coming in and a lot of more commercial voices. That was something that I took to Washington with me, and John Dingell had something of the same experience, I think, in his background. John was one of my very good friends, my chairman, a Democratic chairman of my committee, because the years that I had in the Congress, I was never in the majority. So the result is you dealt with Democrats you found common interest with, and I had common interest with John Dingell and his concerns. But in his concerns, because he was the chairman, in many cases became mine because I was the ranking Republican. And so you had to develop your support or your antagonism for those things that John would like to have had. And I had no indication, no preference for voting for or against it, because it was John's baby or it was my baby. I could be for my baby and against John's, and we'd see who got the diapers for that. And that was the way we ran the two committees, and he was one of the few friends that I really wanted to see when I made a trip to Orson recently. Because
C-SPAN.
Yeah, we had worked together on things like C-SPAN and the things growing out of it in the communications way. And the things that I felt pride in were things like C-SPAN and
public broadcasting.
What are the others? Well, at any rate, a number of things that we could develop common interest in.
Do you think that what impact do you think C-SPAN has had on the world?
That's a good question. my feeling is that it's provided an independent view of things that were issues and are continuing issues from the federal level. But I don't know that I would agree with everything that C-SPAN does today. I don't know that I did when it got started. So I, you know, it's sort of, you're in it, you provided a budget and you provided people to run it, and not always your choice.
When Brown Publishing Company closed in 2010 after 90 years of operation, and you being there for most of those 90 years, what was that like?
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah. What would you say was the main factor in its closing?
Well, don't talk to Brown Publishing Company alone, because you've had other major newspapers, and by major I mean papers like the Cincinnati Enquirer and the Columbus Dispatch, that have been reduced in size to where you could no longer make a living at them. Translate that for those metropolitan communities down to a community the size of Blanchester or Wilmington. We had the Wilmington News Journal at the time. I don't know whether you still got a good newspaper here in Marion or not, but it was the paper on which the president from this community made his reputation. His wife ran it. He didn't have much to do with it on a day-to-day basis. She kept the books on it and so forth, and the Marion Star became a great newspaper. When I came to Marion, I was excited about the fact that I would have the opportunity to be close to the people who were running the Marion Star. It didn't last.
Did you ever think about getting involved in the new wave of media as far as internet technology, things of that nature?
I don't think I'm equipped for it.
Well, you had given up the active leadership of the company.
Would you consider yourself at this point to be retired?
Would you?
Hell yes. Oh yes.
But the follow-up: Do you like retirement?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of free time to do a lot of things I've always wanted to do. I find that at the age of 88, a lot of that has begun to close in on you, to the extent that there are not as many things that you really would have liked to have done. But it's an interesting time of life.
With such an interesting life and being 88, what do you still want to do? Do you have any goals left?
Sure, I'd like to live to 100, but beyond that.
That's a good goal. That's a good goal to have. Is there anything outside of, because we talked about your political career, is there anything in the media business or just in life in general that you regret? Are you big on regrets, any regrets at all?
You haven't told him about the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Oh, yes. Well, that's something.
There is one very important part.
And there's some others. The U.S. Capitol Historical Society is something that I've been very interested in, simply because it's a symbol, and you can do a lot with a symbol, and all you have to do is have a little money to do it. The other one is a nature preserve that's in our community that's unique. Called Cedar Bog, and Joyce and I have both been very involved in raising money for it, as we have for some other causes that we're interested in.
It's Beth Brown.
Beth Brown Memorial Foundation. That's our daughter who died of leukemia, and for whom we give how much money in scholarship each year.
Well, it's 51 years old as of this year, but on the 50th anniversary, we gave $50,000 in scholarships
in our
to Champaign County graduates going into the medical world, which has changed dramatically from what it was originally. It was
we started out giving scholarships for nurses training, mm-hmm. and what was the... we've had two... particularly interesting. ones that have come along that we had no idea that they were in any way involved with nursing and helping people overcome their illnesses. One of them was, can you think of the name of it?
Oh, it's looking into the human body for answers to many different questions. It's not being a doctor or a nurse, but it's including the complete body structure. So that was interesting.
And that's psychology. Psychology is considered mm-hmm. to be something that not having may give you an impact on health. I mean, it's there are all sorts of elements to what nursing people do that they didn't do back when I went in to have my eyes worked on when I was a kid.
There's an interesting there was an interesting story in Time magazine about 6 months ago, maybe a year ago. The cover was, this baby will live to be 145 years old. Do you think that's going to be possible one day for people to live that long?
Not really.
Do you think it's just a time frame in life?
Well, I didn't think I was going to live to be 88 years old. And my wife is not that far behind me, and I think she may live forever.
I doubt that.
What does it take to keep a marriage going 60 years?
Oh, you don't want to get into
that. Well, we had to come to that at some point. We had
a lot of money. What are you making over there?
Well, we love each other, I guess. That's maybe that's primary.
And we don't know where any sharp knives are. We couldn't do anything about it anyway.
Sense of humor, I would think.
Well, sense of humor has a great deal to do with it, and an interest, a current interest in whatever we see or read or whatever.
Well, we mentioned several of them.
Yeah.
Cedar Bog is one thing.
We've raised. Oh, we started something in our bicentennial years in our county, Champaign County, for an arts award given each year to somebody who is completely unaware that they are doing anything artistically, and they receive a monetary award. So things like that, and just.
But we should make the point, though, that we've got $500,000 in a bank somewhere.
Not us personally.
Not us personally, but we have raised the money to get it there.
Yeah.
For the.
Cedar Bog.
Cedar Bog, yeah. for the the scholarships for people who relate to the one that I started when we lost our daughter to leukemia, the medical scholarship.
So those things are very interesting, and you try to keep up with what is going on in the community. But let me add this.
I make one point that maybe it didn't make it clearly. We've raised the $500,000 for each of those two areas. That's $1 million. And each year give away that much to people without any thought or hope of remuneration or expectation.
It's amazing.
But the Ohio History Connection, which is called now, as you are well aware. I served on the board the state board for two terms. And during that time, became aware of their wonderful collection of papers. So just day before yesterday, they came to our home and filled a van full of papers, which will be available for research. And the letters are just magnificent. The letters are something that people can read and understand. The relationships that Bud had with his fellow members of Congress when he was in the Congress. There was one, actually, that President Reagan wrote to him about an energy award that he had received, a very specific award, and pictures of the presidents and all of that wonderful stuff that was our life. So we've had a very full life, and we can look back on that. And our three children are very important in that. And So
three living children, one that passed away,
Beth,
has a significant part too.
So you ask what we're.
We have a daughter who's teaching with the Urbana University, and has done it for several years. And we have a son who is an actor and doing very well. Saw him in a movie last night, as I think I mentioned to you. And Roy is.
Has little Jack, who's 4 years old.
He's 4 years old, and not a bad accomplishment for a guy who's in his 40s. But
there's a great deal.
Great deal. With about 10 minutes left, I thought what it would be fun to do is throw out a few names here from Ohio's past, and whether you knew them or not, just your thoughts on them. And certainly a popular, we talked about him, I'd been interviewed here, Governor Gilligan. Any thoughts on Governor Gilligan?
Well, I knew him, and I think he was interested in state government, of course, when I was not, particularly, because I was focused on federal government and federal interests. He had an interest, I think, in the... I hope he had an interest in the Hardin Museum, but I'm not sure what...
And Cedar Bog. He had...
Yeah, he did.
Yes, he was governor during one of those periods of time.
Certainly, I think probably the most remembered governor, Governor Rhodes.
Governor Rhodes and I never got along well because he did not like new people in politics who he was thinking might all be aimed at him. But we never crossed swords in any public way.
Our current governor, running for office, Governor Kasich.
Knew him when he was in the Congress, just about the time he was starting in the Congress. And I'm disappointed that the many things that he has accomplished have not yet put him in the top tier of people running for presidency. Who knows what will happen by the time the vote comes on the presidency.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to watch his expansion. I'm going to throw some presidents' names at you, and let's start with the one who you said you knew, Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan. Before that, I knew Richard Nixon, of course, very well.
Now, a lot of people say a lot of things about Richard Nixon. What kind of guy was he?
You got a... assumption to add to that about Nixon?
Oh, he very intelligent, very bright, very normal person. You worked with him, but I didn't. So I can't say.
Let me say it this way. I think Nixon knew more about the government in general than any of the presidents that I was close to. He knew what he wanted to accomplish with the direction of the country, and it did not always meet the test of the day, and that was the unfortunate thing about his career. If Mrs. Clinton had President Nixon's sense, she wouldn't have done half the things that she's doing now.
Ford. We don't get to talk much about Jerry Ford because...
He was in there for 2 years.
2 years.
But was not elected.
Not elected, exactly. People think the pardon hurt him, of Richard Nixon. What do you make of him? What kind of guy was he?
He was my mentor when I first went to Washington because he had come to my father's funeral. He was then... newly elected as head of the Republicans in the Congress. I thought it was a wonderful gesture that he came, but it was even more important that we knew many of the people who worked in his office. We knew many of the people who had worked for him. He was perhaps the most well-rounded president we've had in that he had so many activities that he was involved in, and I Mib, but only because that was the time when I was close to knowing the president, that people never really were conscious of his involvement in. And I called him on the day that he was defeated, and I said, you got to look into some of those votes that have come out of places like Louisiana and elsewhere. And he could hardly make himself heard on the phone. He said, Bud, sit down and relax. He said, there's no point in doing that. And I said, okay.
Reagan, who is almost thought of as like a mythical character. Now they bring him up in the debates all the time. He's brought. What was Reagan like?
Well, you have to ask him different parts of his life, because when he was an actor, he was a little horny. When he was going to be president of the United States, he had a firm grasp of the marriage in which he was involved, and she had a firm grasp of him. So when you sent something to the White House, you hoped she didn't get it and turn you with it another story that would put your suggestion out of as a lame one. But I think Nixon. Well, two things about Nixon. I got a picture of some place where I met with the guys who were involved with the Air Force Museum, which is another part of my district, out in Dayton, and they were the junior officers or non-commissioned officers who were going to be asking him for a donation, and I hadn't warned him that was going to be their purpose, and he had no money to give to them. So I put up the buck or two that they wanted from him, and I've never seen it in return. But because Nixon was so busy, he wasn't probably never thought about it after that. And well, I've had several different occasions like that with presidents. But the night that the Fords were leaving the White House.
Yes. Yes.
I told Joyce that here's your chance to play the gold piano. And she sat down and did and so forth. And finally, Butler and the Nixon entourage, who I knew very well, came in and said, Mr. Brown, I hate to say this, but it's after midnight and they have to be up in the morning because he's retiring from the presidency, as you know. So we left.
Who do you think was the best president that you've ever seen in your time?
It's not possible for me to make that judgment because I don't want to say intimate, but it was true that I've been intimate with Jerry Ford and his family. I've been fairly intimate with Richard Nixon, although I'm not convinced that anybody can share Richard Nixon as an intimate associate. We have pictures of Nixon and so forth in our home in Urbana with inscriptions written to him. I knew that Nixon had known my father and had worked with him, but I don't have the same feeling about him as I do about Jerry Ford. I think of Jerry Ford as a sort of a brother in what we were doing at the time.
Knowing Ford that well and having a relationship with Nixon that interestingly, do you think there was a deal on the pardon for Richard Nixon?
No.
Don't think there was. Ford denied it, and you think that was absolutely
yeah,
true.
That's right.
Why do you think he gave him the pardon? Because it obviously hurt him politically.
But I think he knew Nixon perhaps even better than I did. And I think he had two elements in his mind, I'm sure. One is, what is it that Nixon did that was so wrong? And I'm not sure you can tell me the answer to that, or anybody else. But he thought it may be wrong enough that Nixon deserved what he got, but now it's time to pardon him.
People talk about that all the time. But with only a few minutes left here, When you look back on your life, and many years from now, you've sent some stuff to the historical society, and that's great. They'll be able to look at that. But how would you like people, in your own words, to remember you and look back on your career?
Greatest guy I ever knew.
There you go.
What did you say?
Well, that's a good answer. I'll take that answer.
What did you say?
I said the greatest guy I ever knew.
I'll second that.
We'll stick with that one. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you come down here and spend these hours. It's been fascinating to learn about these things, and I'm so glad you were able to do it. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Keep tuned to the station here. Much more coming after this.
WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio. Anyway, I'm going to give it now, 740-383-9944.